I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Gary House Podcast with myself, Gary House. This is episode one of my brand new podcast. Those of you that have listened to my old podcast, the Run Strong podcast, which has been finished for a good few years now, I think it's had a 3-year hiatus. I apologize if you were wanting more. I know some of you actually still listen to those ones. So I thought it's a good time to bring my podcast back, but start afresh. It is the Gary House podcast, and it is my plan to bring to you some interesting conversations with people that I already know in the running world, or that I just find interesting. And we're not going to be limited to running either. So over the years, I've learned quite a lot about social media and business, and it's my plan to share that with you too. Today's podcast hasn't got any of those interesting people on it at all, unfortunately. It's just me. As social media has grown over the last few years, I guess, but topping out with quite a few on Instagram right now, I just thought it's best to be able to direct people to a place where they can hear my story, I guess, and how we've got to this place. Nothing too dramatic, but I'm aware that sometimes people come to my social media and this and not have any context with why I'm a coach, how I've become a coach, am I even a runner, that kind of thing. The place is so, I guess, swamped with runners and coaches these days. This is just going to be a place where I can tell my story very quickly. And if you've heard it before, I would recommend you skip this episode. But we're going to go back to the first time that I actually remember running in any kind of way in such of a race. And that was primary school, actually. So 9 or 10 years old, I remember being in the mini marathon. And then, don't worry about this, by the way, it's not going to be an hour long about my life. It's just a bit of context. But yeah, we go back to the mini marathon in primary school. And in my last year of primary school, I was the only boy. So that means there was me and 6 or 7 other girls. There was another lad in that class, but I think he left early. Can't even remember why now. What that meant is that I was clearing up on sports day, so it gave me a false sense of my potential, I guess. I won quite a few of the races, the mini marathon. I even had a plan for the mini marathon where some of my friends in the year below had to kind of run across and get in the way of any potential winners. They didn't do that, but the fact that I even thought about planning that back then is a bit... Yeah, I guess it tells the story that was to come, a bit competitive in that way. Obviously, when you go to high school, genetics play much more of a part. I wasn't too big. I wasn't kind of developing as quick as some of the other boys, I guess, playing football with lads with beards at the age of 13, 14. when, I'm still waiting for puberty to knock on the door, meant that I was just a little bit behind. But I loved football. I didn't love running as much. But what tends to happen is all the kind of lads that were great at football weren't too bothered about the cross country. And that meant I could sneak in there in the top three, usually get a day off school, go to the county kind of championships, maybe squeeze in there. So it was more to just get the odd day off at school at first. I guess I did have a medium amount of talent at running, or just that I was better at running than I was at football, because the football team was great, if I'm honest. There was lots of good players being scouted for Premier League clubs, even internationals. And we won the Welsh Cup twice, I think. Definitely once. I've got a picture of us winning it once, but I was always on the fringe. I was either playing like left back, or maybe a substitute and getting on for the last 10 minutes. High school, that was about the extent of my running, to be honest. Didn't take it too seriously. And then I left running alone completely while I focused on football as a team sport in my teenage years, early 20s. I would train a couple of times a week with the lads, play Saturday league, play Sunday league. I just loved everything about football, more so the social side, I guess, but I just loved the competitiveness about it. I loved being in the mud. I loved tackling. I loved getting in the faces of other teams, all that kind of stuff. Yes, but again, I was a bang average footballer in a team that had some talented players, really, and we did quite well. Then in my early 20s, through work, I moved to Manchester. So from a small town, I guess, in North Wales, I moved to Manchester. I just wanted a change of scenery and something new. It was a decision I took in about a week, I think. I had about 10 days to find somewhere to stay, to go and live in a professional house. Five other professionals that all had good jobs. I was in a new job. I was a bit lost, if I'm honest. I didn't have any money outside of paying my rent and a bit of food. I wasn't eating properly. Didn't have any friends really in Manchester, although I was meeting some new ones. Obviously didn't have a football team to join and to play with every week. So I started running down the canal pretty much daily, if I'm honest. I'd always been a member of the gym, played all lots of different sports, but just didn't have access to it in Manchester quite. And it kind of hit me quite hard in the fact that I didn't have that group of friends to play tennis with or just kick a ball around with. So running was just the obvious option, really. I used to wear my five-a-side trainers and run down the canal. And I guess like most people that go to running in their early 20s or 30s or 40s, it was a struggle. I put my five-a-side trainers on and my Sunday league kit, ran down the canal, and I remember it was a hot day in Manchester and just had to sit on a bench within 5 minutes. And I'll never forget just an old guy in his short shorts running past me on the canal like it was a breeze. He was just running with his dog, said hello, good morning, while I was a big sweaty mess on the bench. It didn't put me off, though. Whether it was more the fact that I was just running to escape out of the house because I didn't know these like new people yet and I was trying to avoid just any kind of interaction with them, I don't know. But I did enjoy the fact that when I got back, I was like sweaty and I'd put a lot of effort in, different to football, because like for the last few years of the football, I was probably hungover for most of them on a Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning, whereas going out purposely for a run without a watch, without any music or anything like that, and just seeing the progress that I could make on my own, that's what spurred me on, really. So that was the start of my running journey. It was a case of I would look at the clock at the bottom of the stairs of the house that I was staying in, and then, look at the clock when I made it back. And at first I was just trying to go a little bit longer every time. Then I was trying to go a little bit faster. If I needed to get to work quicker, I would leave a little bit later, that kind of thing. So yeah, there was the structure to my training was based around time and effort way back when. I didn't have heart rate monitors. I think they were just coming in. About then, we're talking quite a while ago, probably 16 to 18 years ago now when I started out. So I'm 39 and I think I was in Manchester early 20s, to give you some kind of idea of the time scale. Wasn't interested in races, didn't really know about races, if I'm honest. It was just, like I say, keeping fit. I started to lose a bit of weight. So I guess it was just what you would call, I mean, if you see me on social media or you see me at races, I guess you would call me slim. Yeah, I've been called all sorts, thin and skinny and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't bother me at all, but yeah, your body type I guess does play a part with the running. So when I was going out drinking every weekend and eating rubbish, even though I was thin and skinny, I didn't have any body shape, didn't have any real strength. But when I started running, the first thing I noticed is that my arse disappeared. So I remember going to the doctors. I was self-aware enough to know that I shouldn't be dropping all this weight, but I didn't know anything about calories, or I didn't know anything about your macronutrients. I didn't know anything about how much I should, what I should be fueling with, anything like that. Yeah, so my arse disappeared. I went to the local GP and I said, I'm a bit worried about my kind of rapid weight loss, even though I was only about 9.5 stone at the time anyway. And again, that was another, I guess, a turning point or a pivotal point, but didn't know it at the time. The doctor, the GP, GPs are obviously great for lots of reasons, but the advice I got wasn't great. He just said to, if you want to be healthy, then eat more nuts and pulses. That was about the extent of the advice. So yeah, I ended up just buying books and educating myself on why I was dropping weight. And obviously now with social media and YouTube and lots of this information available, I guess it's a little bit easier to understand that if I start running more and eating less, then I'm going to drop weight, even though I wasn't kind of overweight at the time anyway. Yeah, so that seemed to sort itself out. I just had a basic understanding that I have to eat more. Still didn't really understand calories or calories in and out and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, my nickname in the shared house was just Gary Tuna at one point, because all I could really afford was dried pasta and tin tuna with tomatoes chucked on top. That was my lunch and tea for, yeah, God, weeks and weeks while I was there. So Gary Tuna became a thing in Manchester. When I entered my first race, again, I wasn't interested in racing, but I had met a girl on a night out. It was a friend's birthday back in Chester, which is near where I used to live. So we're all on a night out. I met this girl briefly, and yeah, she obviously took a shine to me, which is natural, but we obviously hit it off and yeah, went on a few dates, I think. Back, yeah, because at the time she was living in Leicester and I was living in Manchester, but we'd met in Chester, so it was all over the place really. And I I entered Leicester Half Marathon with the sole goal really to, well, there was two goals. I wanted to impress this new girl that I had been dating, and I also thought that if I run the Leicester Half Marathon living in Manchester, hopefully she's just going to say stay over for the night or the weekend. So very creepy, I know, but I feel like I always feel like I can get away with saying this story by the fact that we are still together, we're married with two kids, all that time on. So although it didn't impress her, or I'm sure it didn't impress her, I couldn't hardly walk back to the bus that we had to get back to her house in Leicester. Yeah, it was not a great performance, put it that way. It did mean that we got to spend more time together. I spent the weekend in Leicester, had a great weekend, and yeah, that was it really. So yeah, maybe we will ask her one day if she was impressed enough to stick around. So yeah, that's kind of my creepy origin story. I don't think I'd get away with it these days. Yeah, I mean, that's probably a good thing, but it is a happy ending to the story, I think, in terms of both my running and obviously being married with kids. Like I say, Leicester Half Marathon wasn't great. I remember all the old guys beating me in their short shorts, finished with my lace untied, chafed to hell. I still had my Sunday League shorts on, I think. And yeah, just didn't go great. But I was hooked and I started learning about technique and movement and buying all the books that I could and all the runner's worlds that I could. And I was absorbing any information I could, really. I vowed to make myself better. I wasn't kind of, didn't have any lofty goals or anything like that. I just wanted to be better than I was last time. And yeah, there was a lot less races in terms of trail racing then and mountain races. It was either local 10Ks or half marathons, maybe the odd trail race available or fell racing, and obviously. But yeah, I chose the next race to be Edinburgh Marathon. Put a good training block together for that. And again, yeah, that didn't go great. But I mean, I think I was around 3:20 for my first marathon. So it's all relative, isn't it, these days? And lots of you will obviously think that that's a great time, and some of you won't think that that's a great time. But for my first marathon, I was chuffed with that. And just the whole fact that you got to go and visit somewhere else, have a night out, have some beers afterwards, eat good food, make all the mistakes that you make in your first marathon. And yeah, like, marathon running still is the toughest form of running, I think, more so for the training involved, especially the whole idea of most people's marathons is to get a PB. So you start talking finer margins the faster you get. So I still think it's one of the toughest and most, I guess, fruitful forms of training. I went back to Edinburgh Marathon. Then we, with a close friend, Craig, who's no longer with us, actually. But yeah, they're really good memories of going to that for a second time and seeing Craig do his first marathon. He went on to do triathlons and ultras, and I helped out with coaching. So great memories back doing that, really. I've forgotten a lot of races, but I do remember the ones that usually either didn't go too well or, yeah, just had great times around that actual place. Never mind, forget the times. I ran my first ultra marathon within 12 months, maybe 18 months, and that was the London to Brighton ultra marathon. Those of you that are old enough to remember it, because it no longer runs, but that was, it was just one of the most kind of, I guess, well-established races, ultramarathons on the calendar. And you had to find your way in via, I think it was still a postal entry form. There was, I was in some weird forum of ultramarathon runners on the internet. Facebook wasn't really.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A thing even then, or it might have been just, but yeah, you definitely had to hunt out these races. So London to Brighton, 53 miles, I think, or maybe 56, someone will correct me. Just seemed like the next logical step, because I'd done all the, I'd done the marathon thing, I'd read Dean Karnes's book, I was looking at technique and movement and all that kind of stuff, so I thought, oh, I can run longer, and I'm going to be an ultra runner. And then I'll never forget, maybe 2 weeks or a week out, I got sent the map book for the ultra marathon. Yeah, the map book. It was, I think if it was a 56-mile race, I think it had 56 pages detailing of detailed OS map. There was no GPX files and stuff back then. Not that I knew of anyway. I don't even know if I had a watch. But getting this book through the post was scary. That was the first time I'd been scared. I wasn't scared of the distance until I saw that map book. It was pure naivety why I wasn't scared of the distance. I hadn't again, because I wasn't really tracking my running. I was just running for hours out on the canals or the hills back at this time. Not too structured. So I turned up in London on the start line, and it was pitch black, obviously, early start, and just thought I would be okay with the navigation. Not what gave me that idea, I don't know. But yeah, after page one of the map, I was pretty lost leaving London. And I was lucky enough to just kind of run in between groups of people that knew what they were doing. And I would run with this big map book out, like with my thumb on the page that I thought we were on. And when they would discuss which way to go, I would be kind of nodding or just going along with it, trying to fake it until I made it. And that was the tale of the day, really. I went out way too fast, got lost, then tried to play catch up. I kicked a route jumping over stile. Like, I'm in a 56 mile race. Why am I jumping over stiles? So kicked and then just instantly felt pain. And my trainer filled with blood from that point. The toenail was off. Didn't know any of this until I finished, but like, what an adventure. I remember catching up with two army lads, really, and they were basically navigating off the sun. So that was me. I settled in, stuck with them, and they were kind enough to let me tag on to them for the rest of the race. I think I finished about top 70. God knows how long it took me. Looking back at the results, there was people like Robbie Britton and stuff in the race that I've gone on to be friends with, and yeah, look up to those kind of lads that were running the races at the time. Now it's great that I can call them friends, I guess, or at least like peers in the coaching world. And so London to Brighton was my first ultra marathon. Top 70, maybe, out of, I don't know, 100, 120. Nothing to give me any ideas that I would ever do well at this sport. But I just wanted to do better, like I say, keep getting better. Round about that time, I had heard about a 24-hour run, the Adidas Thunder Run, which sadly is just, I think it's just finished. I don't know if it's going to come back, but it's a 24-hour run on a 10K loop cross-country. And that was, I did that one for charity. I obviously wanted to do it, but I did it for a local animal charity. And I think I needed that just to, again, to give me the accountability to make sure that I went and did this 24-hour race, because, again, I went from marathon to 56 miles to 24 hours. Had no target, really, other than to keep moving for as long as I could. And, by then, Charlotte was coming along with me to all these races. She was my support crew. We were pretty naive again. We put the tent. The tent was probably about a mile away from the start finish when it was meant to be in the little solo area, but we put it so far away there was no way I was going to that tent every time I needed food or a cup of tea. So she managed to park the car. She pulled up literally by the start finish line, and I would run, get in the car for a cup of tea or something, then she would kick me out. So she stayed up for the whole of the 24 hours as well, minus the odd power nap maybe. And I was hallucinating. There was dogs crossing me. But the fact that nobody had really told me that I could stop, stopping wasn't really an option. Like, it was, again, 24-hour races weren't really big on the calendar. I didn't really have any information to go off, as in how far I should be going. I told Charlotte not to tell me how far I'd even gone or how many laps I'd done or where I was on the scoreboard until the morning. Until the morning, about 6 a.m, and it finished at 12 p.m. And she said, "Are you sure you don't want to know?" And I found out, I think that was eighth. So I pushed on and managed to get seventh, and finishing seventh in a 24-hour, I think it was seventh anyway, meant, oh, obviously I'm better at this than running 10Ks. I mean, I was completely out of it at the end of that race. I remember getting in the tent and feeling instantly like something is wrong. I think I'd lost nearly a stone over the 24 hours. Again, naivety and not knowing how to fuel, but I was young enough and dumb enough just to keep moving through the night. I listened to the whole of Lance Armstrong's book, I remember, before we all knew when he was the inspiring Lance Armstrong. So I just remember listening to that book on audiobook with this massive player strapped to me, like a big iPod. But yeah, it was just amazing. Finishing a 24-hour race, I'd covered 94 miles. And that was it. I was hooked on the ultramarathons then. I went on to do stuff like Equinox 24 hours, did that four times, finished second twice and was lucky enough to win it twice in my four goes at that. I did Liverpool to Leeds, Canal Race, 135 miles in under 24 hours. I was also DNFing a couple of times. I tried the Grand Union Canal Race after that, thinking I would do okay. I did that race. I'd finished second in the Liverpool to Leeds race to Paddy Robbins, a famous British ultra runner, for those of you that are old enough to go back that amount of time. I finished second to Paddy. I think he was about 2 hours, 3 hours ahead of me when I'd ran 23 and a half hours for 135 miles. So that was an amazing run. But I was still buzzing every result that I got, whether it was a second at a local 10K on the trail or second at that 24-hour race. And going into the Grand Union Canal race, that was the first time I thought I'm going to try and race it. Or I had aspirations to kind of do okay in it. And what I had also done is read some articles on about how to be fat adapted and how I should be fueling myself with nuts and seeds and all this shit in hindsight, basically, because I ran the first about 50 miles of the Grand Union Canal just eating nuts, seeds and cheese. And up until that point, I'd used gels and stuff sporadically. So still no real kind of method to my fueling, but at least I was fueling with gels and like jam sandwiches and all that kind of stuff. So basically, I'd gone from having carbohydrate as my fuel source to switching to fat in a 145-mile race for the first time. I think I was in third place within 50 miles, feeling good, actually. Felt full of energy. The sun came up a little bit more, got a little bit hot, and all of a sudden I started thinking, oh, if I could... I saw a little tuck shop on the side of the canal, and I bought two cans of Coke, a Mars bar, necked them, had an ice cream, tried to get going again, and within half a mile I was in the bushes of someone's garden throwing up, curled up in a ball. And again, that was an experience, but it taught me that I shouldn't just read something and apply it. I should look a bit further. I should at least test things in training. And from that point is when I really knuckled down in learning more about running and nutrition and training and strength and all that kind of stuff. And that's what led me into working into gyms as a personal trainer at first, but then more running based, I guess. I was just attracting runners. I was a 9-stone ultra runner in a gym, so naturally marathon runners came to me. I took that business outdoors. I didn't really want to be in the gym, and I didn't want to pay the £500 plus a month just to be in that gym when I could do that running technique and movement and strength outside. Grew that business. Those of you who know, I was the original Run Strong, and I say that quite confidently because I checked before I started. Now there's hundreds of them, and that's not a bad thing at all. But that is the reason why I changed to House Running Club about 2 years ago with the great Tim Marner branding. So yeah, that is my running journey pretty much in a nutshell. These days I've done races in France, Italy, lots of the big ones in the UK, lots of the local fell races all the way up to finishing the Dragon's Back twice. I've been on podiums, I've won races, I've DNF'd, I've finished middle of the pack, I've had awful races. Haven't had too many injuries, mainly impact ones. I've broken both my elbows, I've done my Achilles. But yeah, I've remained pretty resilient, I guess, through the years, through the training. I've had great coaching, great mentors. And yeah, and the same goes with the business, if I'm honest. The personal training, like I say, went outdoors, then it grew to across two locations. I had around 100 members locally, before I ever took on an online client, and I wouldn't really call it an online client. I was just helping one person, a friend. Then five of the group that I was coaching started coaching them, and it was just writing down their training on Word documents. But obviously then Word got out and I started charging people, and that became a big part of my business too. And I guess luckily, but it was also by design, like going through a few winters in North Wales, coaching people outdoors, just was quite tough. So this opportunity to coach people online was a good one. And yeah, back then there wasn't many people doing it really. I knew Robbie Britton was doing it and he seemed to be doing okay at it, but I still didn't really know how to be. I was confident that I could help people with the coaching part. I just didn't know how to go about the systems and processes. So yeah, again, I went down the rabbit hole of mentors with business and social media. And that's why my own coaching group is set up a little bit different, really. I've never learned off another coach in running. I've learned off coaches in other areas of life, I guess. And yeah, it went pretty well to the point where it was running at about 50-50. Half the business was outdoor coaching, which I loved. I loved coaching the groups and the community side of things. But I also loved being able to coach people from around the UK and now around the world before all the lockdowns happened and everything. The business was moving more online, but that really kind of pushed it to fully online. And then so I don't coach in person anymore unless it's the odd workshop. Sometimes a running group might hire me for an afternoon, or I do talks at various kind of events. If you name it, I've probably been there on podcasts too. So yeah, it's been a really good and fulfilling journey, both my running and my coaching. Speaking at events like Love Trails and headlining at the National Running Show and being on some of the best and most listened to podcasts that I listen to myself is all just it's just a bit of a pleasure, I guess. So now I'm starting my own one, and that brings you up to speed, really. I'm not, this sounds like I'm retiring or something, but no, we're just starting, because I am now pretty much a coach that does running on the side. I train very hard, I train daily, but I can't get out to races as much as I used to. I've got the kids to look after and I don't want to spend my weekends away from them all the time. I've got Charlotte that supports me. She has done from day one. She is now part of the business. She helps with the accountability side of things. And she is probably the reason why we're doing this, because she's going to be putting this podcast out for you all. So I just have to speak to camera and interview the guests. So yeah, if you ever enjoy the podcast, you can thank Charlotte later. But everyone that interacts with my stuff, whether it be on Instagram, whether it be on YouTube, on Strava, whether it be at races, like, you're all playing a part, if I'm honest, and you've enabled me to coach and take this to the point where it is my career and support my family with it. So yes, I do act around on social media sometimes, but there is always a point to it. It comes from a good place. And yes, I thank everyone to be a part of it, really. So yes, anyway, that's enough for myself, but hopefully it gives you a small insight to how it all started. Where it's going to go. We've got some interesting people coming up, I hope. Any ideas, hit me with them and the usual methods. Hopefully you end up subscribing, downloading it, giving me reviews. But for now, yes, just enjoy the first guest, which I'm not sure who it's going to be, if I'm honest. I've recorded a few already. And I've started out with one question to kick off the interview each time. I don't know how long that will last, but it's a nice icebreaker. But if you have any ideas of where you want the podcast to go, yeah, please share them. Okay, that's enough from me. My name is Gary House, leader of the House Running Club, and you can get me on social media anytime if you have any questions.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.